This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. A shaky, but perhaps in the end, maybe vaguely at least, perhaps vaguely optimistic week on the stock market, although there were more reports, accumulating reports of corporate misdeeds. WorldCom declares bankruptcy. AOL Time Warner. It's getting harder and harder to say that now is under investigation. Perhaps most dramatically, we had the scene in New York this week of the founder of the Adelphia Communications Company and his sons arrested, accused of looting the company. Joining us now to review all this is Dan Schor. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
In response to what I think we can fairly call the crisis in corporate America, Congress has agreed on the terms of reform legislation.
Yeah.
How tough, in your judgment, and how smart is this new bill?
Well, they certainly have taken a longer step towards regulation than we've seen since the whole wave of deregulation started during the Reagan administration. What the bill does is to establish oversight over these accountants like Arthur Andersen. It provides some stiff jail terms for corporate fraud, although that kind of white-collar crime is very hard to find and prosecute. It beefs up the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is now supposed to ride herd over greedy CEOs. And as remarkable as anything were the congressional votes, unanimous in the Senate, 423-3 in the House. This is a Congress that a few weeks ago would have been found dead before it be found voting for regulation of business. And will the president sign it? Yes, the president will sign it. Everybody wants to be on board the anti-greed train.
Well, at the same time, what do you think the chances are of this legislation increasing investor confidence?
Well, from what we saw during the week, when, you know, there was a modest rebound on the market, and the question was what caused that rebound, well, whether it was because of hoping that the new law will keep the CEOs honest, or whether it was simply seeing John Regas and his sons marching off in handcuffs, mm-hmm. It is hard to say. But clearly there is a connection between investor confidence and whether these things are going to be fixed up or not, and the hope that they will be improved, I think, may have had some effect.
Mm-hmm. Given the reverses in the stock market, given obviously the accumulating questions about misdeeds in a number of major American corporations, there were people that found it surprising that SE Chairman Harvey Pitt chose this moment to ask for a raise in promotion.
Yes, he showed an exquisite sense of timing, I think. Here he is ducking Democratic bullets, and then he bobs up with his proposal to give himself cabinet status, and that would involve a big raise for him. I think the administration reaction was well given by Ari Fleischer, the press spokesman, when he said, simply looking straight ahead in the press room, that Mr. Pitt was acting on his own.
Now, lawmakers also made some progress on legislation to create a Department of Homeland Security. House gave this administration most of what it asked for. The Senate version of the bill, however, was so unpalatable to the president, he signaled that he would veto it.
Yeah. There's something very interesting going on here. On the surface, it seems to be about whether civil servants, when they're transferred into the new department, get to keep their civil service protections or not. I think there is a somewhat bigger issue that is hidden in this. And it has to do with the fact that presidents in the past have tried before to take away from Congress some of the power of the purse. Now it's being called managerial flexibility, and it has to be because we have a great crisis on our hands and the president has to be free to address the crisis. But what is involved is whether he takes a new department with 170,000 people, who can hire them, he can fire them when he wants to. He can take the money that is appropriated in one large sum, move it around the way he wants to. He can abolish a whole office when he wants to. And there are some senators, starting with Bob Byrd, the Appropriations Committee, Chairman, who don't plan to surrender the congressional prerogative of the purse to the president, even in an issue like this. And that, I think, is what's involved here. It is who has the power over the purse to establish a new agency and to decide what happens in that agency.
At the same time, Congress held up a bill that would have made it tougher for individuals to use bankruptcy as a way of escaping debt. This legislation was expected to pass. Why is it not so far?
Yeah, the Congress was well on its way towards giving the president and the credit card industry this big victory of saying it would be harder to be able to use bankruptcy to escape your debts. And then it got hung up, ironically, over what? Because it would prevent those people who are fined for blocking abortion clinics from using bankruptcy to escape that fine. And so those who really wanted to support the Right to Life movement supported it, even though it meant that they had to stop, at least for the moment, a bill that would make it harder to use bankruptcy.
Congress did not reach any agreement at the same time on extending prescription drug benefits under Medicare.
No.
Now, a lot has happened in the world since the last campaign, but there was a time when that last presidential campaign seemed to be dominated by that issue. Why has nothing happened?
And it could still, again, be a potent election issue in the coming campaign. But the problem for members of Congress is figuring out who benefits from it and how do you benefit. You get blamed for failing to deliver, or do you get blamed because you have delivered and you delivered the wrong thing and it's not enough? There's a very complicated pause and standoff on the scope of the program, how benefits get delivered. And it looked for a while though the issue was dead. Then we began hearing that it will not lie down. There seemed to be some backstage negotiations, at least on the Senate side, to get at least something that would provide benefits for low-income elderly people or those who already spent a lot of money on prescription drugs. What it would do would be to take us one step away from the general entitlement that Medicare was supposed to be. Medicare was not to be an anti-poverty program. It was supposed to be a general entitlement program. And if you now say that we'll provide drug benefits only for those who are poor, I think you're changing the nature of Medicare somewhat.
And before we leave Congress, they're one vote under the legal limit because Representative Jim Traficant of Ohio has been expelled. Singular event in the chamber?
Well, I guess if you say literally, it's not singular because it's the fifth time in history that a member of the House has been expelled. But singular in the personality of Jim Traficant, who seems to revel in this low circus, high theater, to a point where I think he may even enjoy going to jail. And I suppose when he gets into jail, he will end up maybe hosting a talk show from his jail cell, perhaps giving advice on ethics.
All right. I want to ask you about turn to events in the Middle East. This morning, there's word that Palestinian gunmen apparently opened fire on two Israeli cars. Four civilians were killed southeast of Hebron. The attack that captured a great deal of attention this week was the Israeli military missile attack on an apartment building in Gaza that killed one of the leaders of the terrorist group Hamas, but also 14 civilians.
That's right.
Including 9 children.
And there was apparently another casualty. There was apparently a group of supporters of Yasser Arafat who were prepared to declare an unconditional ceasefire. And that move, which I know not much about, seems to have been aborted by what happened here. It is really quite remarkable that the Sharon government at one point thought this was a big success, and then after the president had said this is a very heavy-handed thing to do, it's the president who usually is very much in favor of what happens in Israel, they began to realize that this may have been a very great mistake. I'll tell you something, the Sharon government seems to I'm going to get in trouble now. The Sharon government seems to share with the American forces in Afghanistan an apparent inability to apologize when you have killed innocent people.
Did Shimon Peres apologize, did he not?
Shimon Peres apologized, but Sharon did not apologize. They find it very difficult to apologize, as America does.
Okay. Thanks very much, Dan Shore.